Well?
I've run every search engine, still no clues.
No reference to Vet on the search engine.
Nothing.
I don't understand. Ram's got something planned, Mega. But I just don't know what it is.
Paradise.
There could be more to it than that. We have to work together to keep the technos intact.
For your sake or for Ram's?
Cynical, Mega. Very cynical. If Ram's got rid of Ved, he's capable of getting rid of anyone. Including you and me. So we just have to proceed with great care, okay?
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 49 of Conversational Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance. Joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Barita.
With episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 49, the screenplay was done by Marie McNeil. It was directed by Peter Nathan. And the episode synopsis be read up by Tamsin.
Amber, Jay and Ebony depart the eco camp, but the technos are not far behind. Ziva gets a glimpse of Lex's dream while Pride crushes May.
Leaving Bray in the care of Trudy and the ecos, Amber returns to the city alongside Ebony and Jay as Trudy provides a crypt clue to a confused Hawk about her sudden change of heart. On the road, Jay and Ebony get on so well that Ebony feels the need to feign a twisted ankle to get some attention from him. So yeah, panel, what do you make of the Amber, Jay and Ebony triangle here?
Okay, let's start from the beginning. I wish we'd seen just one scene of Amber struggling with her decision to go back to the city. It's almost comical that Trudy, he's like, got your son, I'll take care of him. And it's like, I don't think she's worried about him at all. I don't think he ever came into the decision about her just deciding to go back into a war zone and over trauma. That there's not even a discussion or reasoning from Amber as to why she goes back. That's all I want. I want my typical Amber, I'm struggling through this, but this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm fighting for. This is why I think it's worth it. Da, da, da. That's all I need. I don't even care if the reason she's going back is Jay. I just want her to say it. Just tell me why you are willing to leave your child behind to go back to a place where it's possible you might never come back to him. And that's like, I just want that. You know, I just think it's annoying that we don't even get that scene as to why she's going back and pretending that it's a difficult decision to leave her kid. You know, like, show me hugging him. Just show her hugging her child and be like, Mama's coming back. I promise I'm doing this for you. Just anything.
Yeah, agreed.
The only thing I really liked about it was the way that Amber watches Ebony when she fakes her twisted ankle. It's in the background and she's watching Jay and Ebony together, and you just know exactly what Amber's thinking. And she's looming there in the background. It's really, I mean, it's such a bad scene, but that at least raised it for me, because I hated everything about this. I hate what they've done with Jay and Ebony's relationship. I mean, it wasn't very much of a relationship, but to go from, as you pointed out, Liz, where we were two episodes ago when she was ready to give everything up for him and they were going to run away into the sunset together, and now he's completely over that because he's got what he wanted. I think you put that so well across when you talked about that in the last couple of episodes, but this scene really, really shows that more than anything, that there's just this disconnect with Jay and Ebony, and the way that Ebony is to get his attention. And it's just, I mean, the whole thing just gives me the ick.
Mm.
Of course it does. It's like,
Sorry, I can barely watch that part. It's just so cringe.
Yeah.
It is. It is very cringe.
Yeah. And not just the fact that... No, but not just the fact that Amber doesn't seem to give a shit about her own kid, but the whole... Oh yeah, you guys are going back to the city. I've decided to come with. And then Ebony feeling threatened enough to have to behave like that, to try to keep his attention even a little bit.
I'd respect more if Amber was fully aware of what she was doing and knowing it annoyed Ebony and was just, you know, enjoying that. Like, you know, just her own mild, petty revenge. Like, oh, this is going to drive her crazy because she's so insecure, you know? Or if Amber could have just admit that she enjoys flirting with Jay. She likes his attention, and the best part is how much it pisses off Ebony. You know, I'd respect that because, again, I don't care if Amber's thought process is, I'm going to steal your man. Like, I don't care if that's how she feels because she, again, doesn't owe Ebony anything. I don't care about any of that. It's like, okay, fine. But I don't like how the narrative plays it as though Jay and Amber are innocent and Ebony is being melodramatic. You know, like Ebony's in the wrong for being annoyed that her boyfriend is basically behaving now like she doesn't exist, not engaging her in conversation, not checking in on her, is acting oblivious to the fact that she's clearly irritated and wants to address that and see if she's okay, you know, and the fact that she has to fake an injury to get this man's attention, and the narrative is like, oh, so pathetic. And it's like, no, Jay is pathetic. This whole storyline is pathetic, you know?
And I think it also, it throws away everything that they've attempted to build throughout most of season four between Ebony and Jay. It just throws that all down the toilet. Now, when we have watched this in retrospect, this series, what you have seen is, as you've all said, Jay never makes any firm commitments towards Ebony and et cetera, et cetera. But this one of those relationships that's built up in the fandom to be a really important relationship, and the show itself pushed it and they flushed it all in the toilet in two episodes, and it is just it's bizarre.
Yeah, I don't understand the choice. I really don't understand why you would, like, again, Ebony and Jay don't have a great relationship, but you spent an entire season bending over backwards trying to convince us that these two belong together, that Jay loves her so much. It's just, oh, if these two could just figure out their issues, da-da-da, all the misunderstandings, all the broken hearts, all the betrayed trust, blah, 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 blah. Okay, and you just threw it all away by making Jay an eight. You just said, no, he never cared. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he didn't give a crap about her. Yeah. Like, she's already yesterday's news. He's just annoyed with her. He's treating her like, you know, inconvenient baggage on this trip now, you know? And we're supposed to dislike Ebony's attitude. You can dislike Ebony. Fine. There's so many reasons to dislike her. But you shouldn't dislike her because she has an attitude on this trip. Because this is a viable attitude for her to have, given the circumstances.
Yeah. And I don't know if this was just me reading into this, but I also got the feeling that he was embarrassed by her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He was embarrassed to be seen with her, but the minute he saw Amber, he was just like, oh, yeah, this? Oh, between us? I mean, we were just leaving the city at the same time, so, you know.
But it's wild, because Ebony is many things, but she is not in. She is not someone you would be embarrassed by.
Nope.
I just hate this whole opening scene.
Yeah, it's grim. It's really grim.
It feels like it's just there to show us that no matter what Ebony does, she'll always be deemed inferior when it comes to Amber.
I also hate how, I don't care about Jay, but I hate how, like, Amber is not aware of her own feelings here. Like, she knows how she feels when someone special enters her life. But the way they write it is, it's like she's really blissfully unaware. She doesn't know what she's doing. I just don't like that aspect.
Which is crazy. Yeah, because me either. Even Trudy sees it.
Yeah.
That's why I said I'd have more respect if Amber was fully aware that, oh, I know this is driving Ebony crazy. And you know what? That makes me feel good inside.
Yeah.
I'd love it if her, it's if she was watching. Lying. Right. Like, if she was watching them too, and actually had a knowing, petty smile on her face, rather than the, wonder what that's about. I don't know what Ebony's acting. Like, stop it. Amber's not that stupid. You know? Give her some freaking agency. You're already going to blame her for this breakup anyway, so then own it. Let her have it then. You know? If you're going to blame, make her the fault, make it all her fault that these two don't make it so that we won't, you know, look at Jay, the man behind the curtain. Fine. Own it then. But you can't, they can't both be innocent in this, okay? They can't. But they want both of them to be innocent.
They want both, yeah.
Yeah, but look at Amber. This is all her. This is all her doing, but she's not really doing it, right? You know? And it's like, stop. Cut it out. Just let her own it. Just let her be flaunting it. Be like, is there a problem, Ebony? You seem a little tense. Just anything. Like,
and I got nothing positive to say about Jay here at all.
Oh my God.
All his movements. And that look on Hawk's face, though. Wait, why on earth is he leaving again?
Yep, why is our leader abandoning us again?
Why is he going
again?
Said
she clearly didn't even discuss it with her tribe, like her reasoning behind it. You know?
You're my tribe, you take care of my kids, and see ya.
Yep, tell him I love him, and I'll be back soon, because I don't have time to say goodbye.
Well, I mean, I think this really underscores, again, something that we've all said, and I've said 100 times, is that that baby shouldn't exist. It's pointless to the narrative. Mm-hmm. The way that, as we've all said, it's just parceled off to anyone who's in range and of a age where they can hold a baby, it makes Amber look bad. And that's not her fault. It's that you can't take this baby with you. The narrative kind of stops around the baby because of the things that Amber's called upon to do. So it would have just been better if they had just not had this baby.
Yeah, he's a leftover prop from Bramber, because that's all he was.
Yeah.
You know, and once they lost Bramber, they're stuck with a baby. They're like, ugh.
And the thing is, I know this is dark, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I'm going to say it. They had the opportunity to write the baby out in the first couple of episodes by just...
Something went wrong.
Yeah, the baby didn't make it.
And we blame Ebony for that. Yeah, that could have worked.
Ooh, but that could have been...
That would be too dark for the new censors, though, because if it feels back in season two, absolutely. But here...
But now it's like... But it's even though you can't take a baby with you... Well, what did Trudy do with Brady then? She strapped her on her back and took her with her to Eagle Mountain.
I think the thing, though, is that Trudy did things a bit differently to Amber, though, didn't she? Like, Trudy wasn't the leader of a couple of tribes and doing the same things that Amber's doing. So I get where you're coming from there, Sabine, but I think... I just think we didn't need multiple babies, basically. We just needed Brady.
We never needed extra babies.
We didn't. We didn't. It doesn't do anything for the narrative. And who even, like, we know who Brady is. It's weird. She's just a baby still. She's a very young child, but we kind of know who she is. And that her relationship with the other members of the tribe has been really, really well fleshed out, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just that she's got a connection to Trudy, but everybody in that mall felt a connection to Brady. Right, even Lex feels a connection to Brady to some extent. Like they all, like Ryan, all of them felt a connection to Brady. Bray, baby Bray, or as I call him, young Damien. Nobody feels the connection to that baby, even Amber.
No,
you know, Brady was well thought out. There was a purpose to them introducing us to a young girl pregnant during the apocalypse. There was a purpose to it. Brady was never a prop. You know, she was a symbol of the, you know, this new world and the challenges within it. And she continued serving such a purpose to the story. She represents this innocence and the struggle, you know, she always served a purpose till, you know, last couple seasons. And, but Bray was never envisioned for his why did Bramber have to have a baby? The only thing somebody thought was, wouldn't it be cool if Bramber had a baby? Wouldn't that cement their love for each other? And if that's the only reason the baby ever existed and why they sped up the pregnancy that the baby could be born as a cliffhanger and all that jazz, once Bramber was gone, the baby no longer needed to exist, but they were stuck. They had committed to a baby. And no one ever really thought, well, what could the baby mean? What could the baby symbolize? You know, what could his purpose be in this world? They washed their hands of him as soon as Bramber was out the window, because he only existed for Bramber.
Yeah.
What do you call it? When you're he was an impulse buy. You know what I mean?
And I mean, there's a version of Baby Bray that works if Dwayne had decided to stay and we'd had Bray and Amber, because obviously they just hand him off to each other, right? Like, oh, I've got to go and do this, you take care of the baby, I've got to go and do this, you take that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So it doesn't feel like they're neglectful parents because they've got a partner they can hand their child off to, okay? But as it is, it paints Amber as this neglectful parent, which we know she isn't, because she's many things, but neglectful is, well, it from season one, let's say, neglectful was not what Amber was. She has become neglectful because of certain things that have happened in the plot. And this, the way she treats her son, because, as you say, he's just an impulse buy, is, it's so detrimental to her character.
It wasn't appealing to them, the idea. Like, sometimes they like the idea of Amber as a single mother, because they'll still use her prop, you know, and it doesn't work, though, because they're not committed to it. You know, they both like to use it for drama points. She's a mother, you know, and this must be so difficult, the decision she has to make for her child's sake. But then as soon as it's not convenient for the plot, the child is shuffled off, because it's like, well, we don't want her to be identified that way, you know, and it's like they almost look down on the idea, like Amber being a mother makes her lesser.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd also say there's a hierarchy between Amber and Trudy in terms of their motherhood. Now, it feels like, and this could be again my misreading of the text, or also me putting too much into it, but it feels like Amber is placed above Trudy because her relationship with Bray was out of love, and they had a proper relationship, whereas Brady was born out of a one-night stand. And everything that happened with you and Trudy. I could be reading that wrong.
And no one could ever love her mother because she's completely undesirable and undeserving of happiness.
Yep.
That could just be a fandom interpretation of what we're seeing and how these two are held up within the narrative, that fans are left to interpret who's a better mother, you know, what they're trying to say to us about motherhood. They never explore what motherhood means to Amber. We watched Trudy struggle with trying to balance being her own person and having a child. We've seen her go through phases where motherhood was all consuming. It was literally her only identity. You know, we've seen how motherhood has saved her from despair. When everything else has gone to crap, she has this beautiful little being to live for, and that makes everything worth it. They explore what motherhood means to Trudy, the ups, the downs, the goods, the bads, the pretty, the ugly, everything. And it can drive you to do, you know, how you can lose yourself to it and how you struggle to find anything outside of it. They do not explore what having a child means to Amber in any way.
No. And yet Amber is always, by a lot of people in the fandom, Amber is often deemed the better mommy.
I mean, honestly, for Amber, motherhood is barely an inconvenience. He's barely there. There's always somebody else who can take care of him. You know, there's no lack of sleep, you know, unless the plot calls for it. Her motherhood barely plays a factor in her story at all.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to have any effect on her character either, because we've spoken about how motherhood had affected Trudy, and that, you know, the stakes are really high for Trudy because it's not just her. If everything collapses, if the mole rats fall apart, what does that mean for her and Brady, right? It's huge. Mm-hmm. Whereas for Amber, there's nothing. There's no sort of high cost for her. If things go wrong, oh, well, you know, it'll be okay. The stakes are low, even though she's got a child. It is, yeah, it's so poorly thought out, especially since the plot of this, you know, Amber's story is actually quite sad because you've got somebody who, yes, she got pregnant, it wasn't planned, but her and her partner decided to raise the baby together. So she had that, at least she thought she was going to have his support. And then he's taken away from her and she loses that support. So, I mean, that's
and
really
she even
tragic.
Contemplated, and she had contemplated ending this pregnancy.
Yeah, she had. Yeah, if she thought she was going to have to go alone, she probably would have ended the pregnancy. But she had him, she had his support. They were going to do it together, Team Bramber, and then he's taken.
Maybe that's why she's not connecting with him.
If anything, this pregnancy, this child, really, we should have seen Amber forged out of fire from this, because why did she not want to have a baby? She didn't want to bring a child into this world where there's no guaranteed safety. She saw her friend struggle through this. She does not want to do this. She doesn't want to walk that road. And Bray's like, you will not do that alone. It's different. We're going to make a beautiful world for our child. And that is what convinces her. She was holding on to that dream that Bray painted for her, that they could possibly make this world someplace worth bringing a child into. And then he's taken from her and she goes into despair and she's like, I'm walking away from it all. I'm just taking my kid. The one safe place I know exists. And then she is forced to realize that even that place isn't safe because she's kidnapped by Technos. She's tortured. All of this could work towards forging an Amber who, this is why she is willing to leave her child behind, because she is trying to create that picture, that world that she and Bray were determined they would make for their son, you know? But it is never discussed. We never see her struggle with how hard that is and what she's fighting for him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I like the location shots. I'll give it that. There are some nice wide shots that are nice. Yeah.
To wrap this up, I got a little thought exercise for you guys. So obviously we've got quite a few comments across our channels, and the prevailing thought is that Amber and Jay was conceptualized from the beginning and was always meant to happen. So here's the thought. So if Beth had stayed for season 4, how do you think it would have happened? How quickly do you think they would have made her forget Bray? Especially considering that Bray hasn't been killed off, so it's not similar to Bray and Danny.
No, I was just saying, if it's anything like the way they handled Lex and Tysand, they would have ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the only remote thing that salvages Bray and Amber and Jay is that they don't have many connections in season 4. They have brief moments where something she says has made an impact on him, you know, but that's it. So she's had the chance to mourn. But if she'd been stuck in this season with the rest of us, I do not think they would have actually given her that time to mourn.
Yeah. We would have gotten a level of her being sulky about Sasha level of mourning.
So I think that it might have played quite similar to this, because I think they might have given it a little bit of a longer lead simply because of how popular Bray was, although with this new audience, who can say? Because obviously they would have no idea who Bray was, like they don't know who Tysand was. And you think about it, I mean, Tysand is the cornerstone of Lex's relationships. She's the one he keeps going back to. We see evidence of that here. She's a really important character to him. And you know, you can't argue Bray's the same to Amber, right? He's the love of her life. But I wonder if they would have played a more Ebony, Amber, Jay love triangle earlier, with him drawn to Ebony, getting with Ebony, realizing he's chosen the wrong one. Maybe that kind of route they would have gone down.
It could have worked. I don't even have a problem with Jade choosing Amber, not being the one he wants to be with, and not being at Ebony or whatever. I don't have a problem with the idea of any of it. I just don't think they would have given it any thought. I don't think they would have put the effort into telling that story.
I think the only thing that would have been an improvement with that would have been that they probably skipped over the Jay and Trudy crap.
Mm.
Yeah, because they would have had it in season 4 between Ebony, Amber, and Jay. So they wouldn't have needed another love triangle. Yes.
Oh,
yeah,
but who knows?
They didn't even want to hear it, but they still shoved it in. Yeah.
Right, they still probably would have pulled it into season 5 when they were like, okay, we got Jay and Amber together, but we need a conflict. And so there'd be some misunderstanding. She'd be like, I'm feeling guilty. I can't be with you because I just found out Bray's dead. And then she would have dumped him or something and he would have ended up with you. They still would have dragged her into this freaking massacre.
Poor old Trudy.
Oh, all right, yeah, we'll come back to this subject quite often. But for now, oh yeah, to the other couple. As Ram begins making preparations for entering Paradise Forever, Java plays the dutiful wife and tells him that she doesn't want him to go. Behind the scenes, however, she's rattled by the disappearance of Veg still and is convinced there is something more to the Paradise program. To this end, she tries to convince Mega to look into it and to locate Veg in the interests of the future of the Technos and themselves. So yeah, I know we have talked about it before, but what do you make of Java's flip-flopping?
So I'm really confused about this because from the way she made it sound, she didn't know that his plan was to go into reality space when she's actually known for about 5 episodes that it was. And I was really confused because I was like, what? This is a sudden revelation to you when Ved and Ram have already told you this is the plan. And it feels like we're going round and round in circles with this whole story. With Java, with Ram, with like we said a couple of weeks ago, the wheels have come up. There were wheels, but that feels like this year. It feels like the wheels have completely come off. There were never any wheels. Wheels weren't even a concept in his mind. You know, none of it makes any sense.
I will say that this is one of the few times I totally agree with everything you just said, Tamsin. It's not like Java actually gets any new information, but she acts like it's all new information that she didn't already know. It feels very repetitive in that way. But I will say this as a positive. I like that regardless of what Java's storyline is, whether she loves Ram or not, this still works because of how quietly and subtly she's playing it. You could definitely interpret her actions as someone who loves Ram and is upset at what he's doing, you know, and is going to miss him or mourn him or whatever. And this is not the life she wanted to live with him, where she has to visit him through a computer, you know, just to spend time with the man she loves. And it can also still be interpreted as someone who is just faking it because she's trying to survive. And I like that because when Java's, I prefer subtlety anyway. And so I like that this can be played both ways, regardless of whatever storyline they have Java on. This scene with her way she's behaving, it works in both storylines. You know, she's cautious this episode because, you know, she's got things on her mind. She's thinking of the future. Yeah, he's going to be laying in his latex bed, but the rest of us still have to function, you know. And if the Technos fall apart, where does that leave me? I won't have Ram's protection. You know, he'll be in basically comatose and who's going to care if he gets on a computer screen and tells everyone to be nice to me or whatever? Who's going to actually take orders from him? You know, I like that it can be played both sides. You know, she can still be in love with him and be concerned about these things. And she could have always been rooting for his downfall and is just pretending to be dutiful to protect herself.
I like that he's freaked out about Ved's disappearance, though.
I mean, you would be, wouldn't you?
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah. I'm glad there is.
I'm glad that's not just Ved's gone. Oh, well.
Yeah.
She even makes a comment about that, which I really like, where she mentions, like, Ram, I don't even know what Ram was saying. He was rambling. And she was just like, Siva and Ved were in your inner circle, too. And I like that because she's digging at the fact that you discarded my sister very easily. And we can only speculate about the history there. She was literally his favorite wife. And he was like, whatever, you know. And Ved was his right-hand man. You know, they were a part of your inner circle and they were discarded easily. You can interpret it as Java being like, how can I ever feel secure in my position? I'm your least favorite wife. You know what I mean? You got rid of those two. What does that mean for me? You know, and she's being very careful in that scene. You know, and I like that, you know, because it's like she's got real things to worry about.
Yeah. I also want to just take a moment to talk about, as you mentioned, the latex bed. So the practical element of that is every time you roll over, you are going to wake up. It is, you're going to hear yourself all night. Just so uncomfortable, just grim. The sweat factor.
Nah, at some point. At some point, it'll just stick together and be like cling wrap.
Oh.
He just won't move.
It's just a weird choice.
I was like,
coming from Ram, meh.
Is this because they don't want to change his diapers while he's in there? Like, what?
Yeah, probably.
Why?
They can just hose it down.
I like the conversation with Mega, you know? I just like his performance all the way around. I think it builds up to what's coming next, that Mega's already got plans. You know, he has not put his eggs in Ram's basket. And he's just like, ah, well, you know, that's the plan. That's what he's going to do. And he's already thinking of what he's going to do after.
I like how nonchalant Mega is as well. And I think Java struggles with that because he's so lukewarm all the time, isn't he? Whereas Ved could either be spiky or he could be on Java's side. Mega's really hard to read, so she's never sure if he is with her, against her, whatever. And that's something we're going to see going forward as well. I really like that.
Yeah.
It's enjoyable.
It is, yeah. Because like, Ram is one thing, but you can tell really what he's going to do from different points. He's easier to read. But Mega, oh my God, he's so hard to read. You would never know what he was going to do next.
Yeah, he has a really enticing sociopathic energy about him that I love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's just pretending to be human. It's uncanny. Yeah. Like, so how do you feel about it? She can't get a read of what his opinion is about this because he doesn't seem to have one. He's just, this is what's happening. And she's like, trying to be like, yeah, and that's crazy, right? You know, this is, you know, Ram's worked it out, so we'll see. Like, when she tries to fish for, like, so what, I mean, what do you think that's going to mean for us? You really think that the things are going to work after this? And he's like, that's the plan. Like, that's unsettling.
But we've all had that one coworker that's a bit like that, haven't we? I mean, I know I have, and you're like, oh my gosh.
I know so many people like that.
I need details. They won't give you any.
Nope.
And that's what makes him great at those kinds of jobs.
Yeah.
He is a fishless lake. You can dangle all you want. Nothing's biting.
Mm.
Mega's like the definition of unbothered.
He is. He's so nonchalant. It's brilliant. And if anything, she becomes the bait. She's the fish that's getting caught because he's watching her and how she's reacting. If I was Java, I'd just cut my losses at this point. I'd wait for him to run to reality space and then, run. Like you said, cut your losses.
Yeah, she doesn't have the imagination for it. You know?
Yeah, that's true.
And I think that's so sad because one of the first conversations she has with her sister is, do you ever just dream of, you know, a better life, being with a better man, you know, a real man, all that stuff. And it's just sad that she cannot act on the things that she would like to have. She's stuck in a rut.
Maybe that difference, though, between Java and her other sisters, because for her, it is just a dream. She doesn't practically put anything into getting these things. They are just fantasies. Whereas for Siva and Ebony, they make them real. They don't sit there kind of fantasizing. Although I guess Ebony does about Bray. That's probably the only time that Ebony's actually given herself over 100% to fantasy. Whereas most of the things, they make them happen.
But see, even with Ebony and Bray, it still works because it may have been a fantasy, but she still acted on the fantasy.
Yeah.
Her actions are still driven by what was in her own brain. Like, I'm going to murder your girlfriend. I'm going to kidnap you. I'm going to destroy the lives of people around you until you choose me. All of this was based on this fantasy she was living in. She was still acting towards what she wanted. You know, mm-hmm. Siva, I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to run off with this idiot. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to steal medicine for him. You know, I'm going to sneak off with him. You know, and Siva was the one who was afraid to dream. But Java is like, she's stuck in a groove, and it's not even a groove she made for herself. It's grooves that other people make for her. And she just runs in place on the treadmill that somebody else deigned her to run on. And she doesn't even recognize that. It never occurs to her, just step off the treadmill and see what happens.
Yeah, because we all assume that it was his Rams like of Siva that put them in that position. But what if it didn't go like that? What if Java was the one that he liked initially? And then she's kind of fallen by the wayside because of Siva. Like, there's so much going on here. And like you say, Java's just a character that there's real inertia to her. She's not going anywhere.
Because she doesn't have a compass. There's no direction for her to go.
No.
I mean, even when, you know, season five starts and you think Java has a plan, it wasn't her plan. She's still running in place in Mega's groove that he made for her.
Yeah. I mean, you know, when you think about what happens to her eventually in season five, if she had just bided her time and not called her out immediately, because Ebony's prepared to do a truce until Mega is defeated.
Yeah, it's very strange. Like, that's the most initiative Java ever shows, is I'm going to kill you publicly. Like, I could shoot. It's like, if you really want her dead, just play nice and then poison her. You know what I mean? Smother her with a pillow in her sleep once her guard is down. Like, this is ridiculous. And that's the first time this woman actually takes initiative. It's just to get herself killed.
So Sammy introduces Mouse to Paradise.
Just think about whatever girls think about.
What if I don't like it?
Impossible. You'll love it.
But she thinks it's evil, taunting people with things that they can never have. Sammy later shows his downloaded dreams to Lex and is offended when he scoffs at them, only to discover later that he's mixed up his disc with Mouse's. What do you make of the interlude here with Mouse and Sammy in this episode?
I thought Mouse was cute as usual. I love her acting. I love the way, like you say, she's so frustrated because these are things she can't possibly have. I am confused if I'm being, I'm confused again, so help me out, guys. I'm confused. So these aren't memories, though, are they? But later on, they will be memories, but they're fantasies. I don't get it.
It's like it varies per person, I guess.
I too thought they were going to be generic. You know, scenarios that people could step into. But this first rollout is clearly whatever you think of. And then it makes basically a 3D printed vision of that for you to look at and feel immersed in. I'm not even going to try to figure out how that could work, but whatever. Okay. That's the first rollout. And I could see why that would be addictive. And I will give him credit because I thought it was weird when Sammy goes, he just puts the headset on Mouse and goes, just think about what girls think about. And I was like, what? Like, so this thing can read your mind.
Yeah, basically.
That's a first. Okay. Mm-hmm. It reads your mind, and whatever you think about, it basically downloads what you thought about, creates the image of it for you so that you can, like, again, relive it in a very visceral way and interact with it. And now you have that fantasy on disc that you can go back to at any time. So you're burning you're burning DVDs from your mind. Okay, I think that's what this first rollout is.
That's why I wondered a couple of weeks ago, I said, do we think it's porn? And I mean, we later see them selling CDs. So I did wonder if there's a black market turned out in porn in this as well.
Probably.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
It is a mess. I mean, you can see why Ram's so impressed by what he's done, because, I mean, this is huge, but still. Yeah.
I mean, even AI still needs you to be like, put in keywords of what you want, and it has to steal mm-hmm. the imagery from something else, you know, to create what you want. And this is basically, you put on a headset, you think of something, and it reads your mind and makes a perfect recreation of whatever was in your mind that feels like you can literally walk around in it. And it's like, okay, what are the limits on this, you know?
What's the point of the downloaded dreams? Like, why would anyone want somebody else's borrowed dreams when you can imagine anything you want? Like, what?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question.
Only thing you need are more discs, because it'd be like, okay, there's only so much space on this disc. And so once you've downloaded what you thought about, there's no more room. So you have to get a new disc so you can download more. Like, that would make sense. Like, you're just burning DVDs of what's in your head. But then again, like, they're giving away other. So maybe they are scenarios. Like, okay, here's one where literally you just think about what you want, but here are some presets. I wish they were more clear about what the heck is going on here. Yeah.
Or is it just software that you download onto your headset, and then that enables you to burn these fantasies off?
I'm afraid
anything. Anything. If you wrote this episode and you're listening, please tell us what went on.
It's like literally in the same episode. I was like, what way are you trying to push it? Is it downloading memories? Is it automatic? Like, what presets? Is it like, what are you, make up your mind?
But aside from the technology that we've had to accept that we'll never wrap our heads around because it doesn't make an ounce of sense, I liked Mouse's reaction to it. Like, I loved her little Pinterest bedroom that she thought of and dreamt of. Because I was like, yep, that's a top five. Aww. That's a top five. The Pinterest bedroom, yes. Okay, I will accept that, because who hasn't thought about, like, the perfect room in their house, their little retreat, and what it would look like? And I also love her reaction to, I can't have it. Like, it was so real. Yeah. It was right there. And then I had to come back to this crappy mall where I share a room with you, Sammy. You know what I mean? And I was like, I relate to that. Yeah. Because when I was a little girl, I remember dreaming about a Snickers bar. And you guys, it was so real to me. And I could feel myself waking up. So I remember wrapping my little hand around that Snickers bar. And when I woke up, it wasn't there. And I was pissed off that I didn't have my candy. I was like, I held on to it so tight. So I felt her frustration. And I liked that. Like, this is evil. You know what I mean? These are just dreams I can't have. This is crap. And it's like, it's my dream. I can destroy it if I want to. Let's just ignore the fact that there are still headsets in this mall, despite we have an addict who asked us to get rid of them. We have Celine who wanted to get rid of them. They're
that
everywhere.
Bothered me so much. Yes.
All of the computers they dragged out are compatible with this, you know.
They're all compatible, and suddenly they can all burn DVDs.
Like, I remember Windows XP. This isn't happening. I'm sorry.
I also wanted to say, I thought that Lex's reaction to Sammy, it being Mouse's fantasy, I thought that was quite restrained, and how Lex has been written for most of season four. I thought it was, kind of restrained.
I loved Lex's performance in this episode. Like, most of the scenes, in the mall are quiet, real moments that just show people interacting, which is what I missed and I like. Mm-hmm. You know, it even is reminiscent. It's got, you know, the do music in the background, which is just so season one tribe life in the mall. Just little vignettes of people interacting in this place who live together. And the fact that Lex's reaction is so subdued, it felt much more realistic than him jumping on this chance to make fun of Sammy or make a big fuss out of it. Sammy wanting to impress him, Lex just being like, okay, cool, dude, whatever gets your rocks off, you know, and Sammy being confused. I like small moments like that. It tells you something about the characters and how they feel about each other. Lex is distracted. He takes a moment to, okay, Sammy, show me what it is. And then he's unimpressed and just like, you know what, kid, I'll never understand people your age. I gotta get back. You happy now? I looked at it. I gotta get back to what I'm doing. You could even argue that's a moment of growth considering how we used to treat the children back in season one. It doesn't fit, you know, in the season, but I still appreciate this kind of writing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was subtle, which is something we've not seen from Lex in a long time.
Mm-hmm. Like, this episode made me like feel like, Lex, where have you been? You know what I mean? That's how I felt.
They suddenly remembered he was there and they could use him.
Yeah.
And then he had a past.
Because Lex is very much the Uncle Rico of the mall, still living in his glory days, still telling you stories about how he used to catch game, all that stuff like that. But they don't utilize him or do anything with him or have him affect the story in any meaningful way. But a tiny moment like this made him feel like a real person there, you know? And I wish we had more of this through the season.
Because Caleb can do it. That's the thing. He's one of the strongest actors on the show. And it is a crime the way they neglect him.
Yeah. Waste of talent.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, let's stick with this. Go straight into his next scene. Siva finds Lex crying as he views something in reality space. When he brushes it off, she watches his disc and finds his memories of Tai San.
I understand completely. And I know it's all in the past now.
Sure is.
And that makes it okay.
It does?
Sure. I love you, Lex. And I met you when I met you. What went before was the past. Everyone has one. Look at mine. Ram's wife. No, actually. I don't even feel a pang of jealousy. Just, I don't know, sadness, I suppose. Sad for you that you lost something so precious and good.
The pair then confess their love for each other. So yeah, how do you react to Lex's feelings for Tai San, Siva's actions, and her own reaction to Lex's dreams?
Okay, so everybody knows that my favourite character is Tai San, and also I love Lex and Tai San together. But I want to say, I really like this scene, because, and the Siva portion of it, because it feels like a really grown-up conversation. This feels like a proper adult relationship that two people are having, when one person's basically saying, hey, you've got baggage, I've got baggage, I get it, it's in the past, I'm not jealous of this, I'm happy you have this in your life, I'm sad that you don't have it anymore, this is not going to affect us. And I really liked it. I thought the scene, it put a whole different spin on Lex and Siva, because they're the least fleshed out of all the couples that we've had in season four. And when you see this, you're like, I get it. I get why you two are together. And as much as I'm never going to change my opinion on Lex and Tai San, I do feel like Siva might be a better option for Lex long term, because I think she understands him in a way that neither Sandra or Tai San really did. And I like it. It gave a whole different... And we've never seen two people in this show act like adults and talk to each other like this. This is Grey and Amber season one material that we're getting here. And that's what it felt like.
I disagree, because okay. I think we all agreed that Tai San and Lex were one of the most mature couples we'd seen back in season two. They had many just grown-up conversations with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know that I ship them like anything, but I'm looking at the concept from like season four. This is we've not seen maturity like this entire season.
In a while.
And it was the breath of fresh air. It was two people having a conversation about something. It wasn't a miscommunication, because let's face it, we've got Dee and Patch, they're stuck in miscommunication land. We've got Celine and Pride, miscommunication. We've got the whole thing that's going on with Ebony, Jay and Amber. And then we've got this, and this feels like a proper of a relationship. So when I said that, what I meant was in terms of season four.
So am I the only one who found it interestingly suspicious that Sifa said, "So you're Dysan?"
No.
In what way?
It's like she was watching that and she was going, "Okay, so you're Tysan," as if she knew this girl but didn't know it was Tysan.
No, it's more like she knew Tysan's existence. She's heard her name. That's how her and Lex first met. She and Lex first met with him being like, "I want my wife, you took her." And she's like, "I don't know what you're even freaking talking about, dude." Like, she knows of Tysan, but she's never seen a picture of her. You know, she's like, "Oh, this is the Tysan." You guys ready for this diatribe? Because I got some things to say.
I am just going to say one last thing. It was interesting. We got no Zandra, but obviously Zandra's not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
In the next episodes. So we don't need a visual cue for any new viewers of who Zandra is, because she's not important.
And
yeah, Zandra said
Zandra's not the love of his life, to be fair.
He
wasn't thinking about his past relationships. He was thinking of his wife.
Mm-hmm.
He was thinking of Tysan. That's who he was thinking about. Oh. He wasn't going to go through the long list of, "Well, this is my love history."
Can you
it
imagine?
Makes perfect sense that Zandra didn't show up in this thought process.
But can you imagine though if Lex would have had to look at, okay, it's his dreams, what might have been, and then Zandra and that unborn baby?
That'd be a different story.
Would be way more dramatic.
Okay, so I both love and hate this. I think the writing is really good. The act is really good. It's so quiet and gentle and subtle, and it actually tells us something about the characters. I, too, love very mature response to seeing her boyfriend in pain, seeing that it's because he's thinking of a love he lost, and instead of getting jealous, respects the fact that why wouldn't he be sad about that? This has nothing to do with me, and validates his experience and lets him know this isn't an issue for us. I'm sorry you lost that. I'm glad you had it. I think it's beautiful, and we're cool. You don't have to hide that from me. On and on. That is nice. That is gorgeous. I love Caleb's performance. How subtle he is about being caught crying. He's not snapping and yelling at anybody. He doesn't blow up, but he clearly wants to hide the fact that he's so vulnerable in this moment for many reasons. He doesn't want to share that with anybody. He doesn't want to cause friction between he and Siva. He walks out. I love how she apologized for intruding on something that was so personal to him. All of that is fantastic. You know, I love how she's like, "I love you." And he says, "I love you too," even though there's just a hint of, does he though? There's just a hint of doubt in his performance. All of that is great. What I hate is that this is entirely unearned in this season, because there has been no story through of Lex dealing with the loss of Tysan. Okay. It could easily been peppered in him struggling to deal with this dichotomy of accepting he's never getting his wife back and retreating the way Lex is known to do emotionally, and just plow forward with his life and find distraction. But there's been no exploration of that this entire season. It's like she just ceased to exist. And it wouldn't have taken much to give him moments where we're reminded he's still struggling with it. Like Amber being tortured by the technos, and that being a moment for Lex to realize this is likely happening to those who were taken. This is likely happening to my wife. But he had no reaction to what happened to her. May coming back should have super triggered Lex, because that is somebody who was taken at the start of the invasion who has returned. That could have been Tysan. And she's a hot mess. And, you know, the things that she says, what happened to her, all of that could have stirred up. This is what has happened. Every time he thinks, I'd forgotten, I buried it, I took it out back, shot it in the head and put it under a tree, something happens to remind him. He didn't. It's a zombie and it's hunting him as he's trying to move forward with his life and distract himself with Siva. But they never explored his complicated feelings of trying to get over a wife that's not dead, but is just gone. This is unearned for him to finally have the chance to put on a head that will let him visualize whatever is in his head, and she's the first thing he thought about. That is what he chose to think about. Or maybe he just subconsciously thought about her, and then stream of consciousness, all of their moments. But it's not earned in any way. And it still leaves you with a, so what, how does he feel? You know what I mean? About, is this just a moment where he's remembering this and Siva's really cool with it and he really does love her for that? Or is this the moment where he realizes he isn't over his wife? Because that's where the story is going to take us.
True.
Yeah. It's just it's just preparing the way for what's coming next.
No, good point. So, valid point.
I love it and I hate it. I'm like,
But it was,
this could have been so poignant. It was. I mean, these are gorgeous moments that just reminded me of a love story I was really invested in and didn't waste my time. Yeah. And and I love that it includes shots from season one, because I mean, he was hooked on her from the start. Hmm. There was just something about Aysan, you know, and she was, I truly believe she was the love of his life. That isn't to say they couldn't have, it's not to say they couldn't have grown apart. You know, but season three never gave them much chance to mature together because they were separated through most of it. And they kept using the Guardian and the Chosen as the fracture between them. But you still saw them working through that stuff. I would have loved to see them. No, because they would have ruined it. So I'm glad Tyson's freaking dead and buried. But that's not me detracting from Siva. I just want to make that clear. I'm not saying like, Siva, you ain't Tyson, so why are you even trying? I'm not saying that. I mean, I fully believe that love comes in all forms and that you can lose the love of your life and find another beautiful love with somebody else who's just right for who you are now. But unfortunately, I still think that Siva and Lex's love is undeveloped in their story. And that, again, makes this moment unearned between them, because it's not clear. We know how Siva feels about Lex. But we still don't really know how Lex feels about Siva. Does he struggle with it? Does he ever sometimes look at her? How does he look at her and compartmentalize her part in Tyson even being taken? You know, like, what is he, how does his brain handle these pieces? And when she says, I love you, I believe her. When he says, I love you back, I'm not sure. I don't know if he's trying to convince himself he loves this girl who's wonderful and there's no reason he shouldn't love her, or if this is the moment he's realized, like, did he think he loved her until this moment that he's reminded of Tyson? You know, it's unearned. It just keeps coming back. Unearned. And could have been the breakout moment of the entire season, in my opinion. But
I'd also add, if they had played or written their relationship, if they had fleshed out at all, because you get a glimpse in this of what their relationship could have been like. And like you say, the push-pull between her involvement in what actually happened to Tyson, the reason why Lex is in a relationship with her, because Tyson's not around. And if you get this, it's like a mirage that appears and then disappears. And it's like, this could have been what this was, but it's gone. And it's another wasted opportunity. And we're getting it 5 minutes before the end, which really is frustrating.
It's just more proof. They didn't know where they were going. You know, this is put here because they got the okay that Michelle was willing to come back for a few episodes.
And the worst thing about this is that they will row back on this in season 5.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really frustrating, because we will
So it's like, oh, Tyson matters again because we got Michelle to come back for a couple episodes. We don't know what we're going to do with that or where it's going to go, but she agreed to come back for a couple episodes, so let's throw this in here and get some drama. And it's just a shame, because the performances are great, the shots are great, the lighting in the mall looks really good, and the conversation between Siva and Lex and everything is so good. Yeah. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
It's good to see you too.
When you disappeared, I was so worried. We all were. And Celine came and pulled us all together. She changed. I began to see her in a new light.
She's a great lady.
Oh, she is. At first, I didn't know what was happening. Neither of us did.
Well, what was happening?
We were falling in love.
But...
That's just it. There were no buts. I'm sorry, May. We had a good time together. Really good. But that's over now.
So yeah, go ahead, panel.
I just love how in one episode, they boil down all of Pride and Celine's problems to May. In one episode, yes. They made it all May's fault that there was ever any conflict between these two. And they do it without having any direct conversation. It's so ridiculous. Like that first conversation where she goes, I resigned as city leader. Thanks for being honest here, but you're right. You know, da, 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 da. And he's like, oh yeah, you're welcome. She's like, but we're not getting back together. Ask Celine. All right. That felt so unnatural for her to throw that. Okay. So she's making it clear in that conversation, we still have lots of problems. Just because I can talk nice to you doesn't mean our issues are solved. And then, I feel like they did all these shots at once at that table. It's so funny that it's just at this table. Meet at the table. And this time, Pride's, he confesses, nah, I didn't love May. And it's like, Celine, you freaking knew that. Are you kidding me? But anyway, whatever. He admits, I thought I did. Even that, he's still lying. But whatever. And she's just like, well, I mean, you need to tell her that. Don't you think she has a right to know that you don't? Like, there's nothing there, you know? And he's like, you're using May as an excuse not to get with me. And it's like, Pride, you really have a problem between the two of you? And that's not what she said to you at all? And then he tells May in a roundabout way that we are never, ever getting back together. And again, I swear to God, if even watching this entire season, I was like, this just feels so confusing, this timeline, that the way they're talking is as if she just returned and is confused. Like, May, how do you not know that these two are together? How do you not know? Like, how did you miss that? I wish there was more words to express how she's been seeing things while she's been in her delirium and not really seeing reality, blah, blah, blah. She seemed very aware that they were a couple and all of a sudden just isn't anymore. And he's like, sorry, not going to happen. And she walks away upset. And then he tells Celine, yeah, I told her, she's mad, you're mad, we're all mad. I feel like a jerk. She's like, no, you were brave. I'm glad you were honest. And then, boom, they're together. And I'm like, wait, you're telling me that you'd use this episode to just boil their issues down to May. She was the reason that these two have been a hot mess this entire season. Are you kidding me? Lazy, lazy, terrible writing. Hated it.
Yeah, there's nothing in this at all. And it's the way he changes, the way he doesn't get what he wants. So he just starts shouting in her face. Like you say, he immediately is like, oh, you're just using this as an excuse so we don't get back together. No, no, we're not getting back together because you are insane and me. The way he behaves is just so many reds. He is the king of red flags.
There was one moment, one brief moment. And it's when she comes to tell him, she goes, so I talked to Patch. And he said what happened between you and May. He wasn't trying to eavesdrop, but he couldn't help it over here. And Pride goes, so what? You needed third party confirmation that I actually talked to her? You don't trust me? And she's like, no, I don't. It's like, that's so honest. So please explain to me why a split second later, she's like, but we're totally going to be a couple. I bet he proposed that night, you guys. Like, these two are a hot mess. And yeah. I don't know who roots for this. Like, I don't know who roots for this couple.
Honestly, it's hard to believe. Like, how people held them up as a good couple.
Mm-hmm. I didn't believe. I can't.
Just bizarre.
They really did. But when you look at it and break it down as we have, it's just awful.
It's awful start to finish. It's bad. And you know, it's so crazy. I understand now why people liked Ved and Chloe. I get it now. I understand. I watched season four. I analyzed it. And I understand the what is the word? The answer that couple.
Cledism.
Something like that?
Yeah.
I understand them. I understand the Lex and Siva lovers. I get it. I understand. I even understand the Java and Ram lovers. You know what I mean? Like, I get these couples that people root for. I will never understand why anyone was like, Celine and Pride, though. Like, yeah. Are you kidding me?
As if
they might be the worst couple in the entire show. These guys are worse than Top Hat trying to get with Siva. I mean, Zandra. Like, they are the worst. They're the worst couple in all 5 seasons, these two.
And I mean, him as an alternative to Ryan as well. I mean, let's be honest.
Oh my goodness. I couldn't find a single thing to root for. I couldn't find anything between these two. And they have chemistry.
No, they don't.
Yes. And I think if you look at it as well as an origin story for Celine and May, I mean, there's something there, isn't there? You know, it makes it all more complicated because they once dated the same guy. But as it is, there's nothing to this. It's awful. Celine deserves better. I know that she's got a lot of detractors. I know that Sabine's not a fan of Celine. But honestly, she did not deserve Pride. Nobody deserves Pride.
No. I'm starting to, his behavior in this whole season, him in this whole season, take back moments where Amber was trying to push him on other women. And you're like, yes. Amber, you set these women up.
You get it now. Yeah, you can see why she kept him at arm's length.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also, what a nightmare it must have been to wake up on that mountain, not really know where you are. This guy comes over, he seems okay, and then he slowly reveals himself as Pride. I mean, that is terrifying.
I mean, honestly, you can paint Pride as like that creepy, abusive boyfriend that no one else can see it. And so you think you're crazy. Because if you look at how he's portrayed with Amber, to everybody else, he comes across as like so cool, so calm, understanding, thoughtful, you know, mature and stuff like that. But then season 4 reveals what the girl who's dating him actually goes through that nobody else can see. And so it makes you wonder, is this what Amber was dealing with this guy? She couldn't wait to get away from him.
Yeah.
Maybe that's afraid of ending it with him because she didn't know what he'd do.
I mean, it does make you wonder. It's hook up, and then he started acting like a stage 5 clinger, and she was like, oh no. it's terrifying. And he's a great example of those nice guys in inverted commas.
Yeah. And it's as if Celine hasn't been shafted enough in this season, but it's like it's made worse by her having valid reasons to not want to get back with him right away. Like, I don't mind if she eventually forgives him, he earns her trust back, whatever. But she has valid reasons back with him and set that boundary with him. Like, look, I appreciate you, you know, that I can talk to you and that you can be honest with me about certain things. But that doesn't mean we're going to be a couple again. Only for her to prove he's right. She was just using May. That's the reason. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Celine, come on. What a way to guffinal dump on her character in this season. Because May wasn't the reason, Celine. You know that.
Yeah. I hate the way they get that together. I hate it. I hate it. It's awful. I just, watching this has been some form of torture. Pride is my trauma salad. Honestly.
Yeah, this is I give them the prize. Here's my bowl. I brought Hershey Kisses. Celine and Pride are the worst trauma I've been through in the coupledom of the tribe. I hate them together so much. Best thing he ever did for her was get himself killed.
Yeah.
I know she had a rough time dealing with it, but she's going to be better off. I'm telling you.
Hey, that brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. So yeah, panel, how did you react to the attack on the eco camp?
Do you want to go Sabine?
Oh my goodness, poor Trudy. I mean, I totally get that she chose baby Bray Dyer there by the water. Like, that kid can't crawl away anyways. But oh, my heart just breaks for her. You can see the same level of distress she had when they first rescued her from the Chosen and had to leave Brady behind.
Mm.
Like, once again, she's being separated from her baby. I mean, I'm surprised the Technos didn't see her or Hawk, but it's just so gut-wrenching. And just the idea alone of it, that she has to go through this all again, just breaks my heart.
Yeah. And Tony, as usual, just smashes it. You can just see all the emotion playing across her features. It's like, I feel for you. I really do feel for you.
Yeah.
I mean, I did have a question, though. Like, why were the Technos attacking the eco?
I guess they followed the season.
Because Brady needed to be kidnapped and Trudy needed a reason to come back into the city, Lance. Yes. It's so obvious.
They came looking for Ebony. Because now we can blame it on Ebony.
Well, okay, let's blame it on Jay as well.
Let's go with that. That's fine, yeah.
Basically, in the narrative, it's that they, you know, again, these are way too close to the city, which I complained about. They already followed Jay and Ebony scent all the way here. Probably once they lost their scent at the Scarecrows, they just continued scoping out the area and then decided just when they realized, oh, there's a camp, we're going to raid the whole place, you know, and whatever. This is on the egos, okay? This is on Amber for being like, yeah, let's be this close to the city. You're the leader, Amber. You have to take the blame for this one. Because you put everybody, including your own child, in danger for convenience of plot. So I don't know why I find this comical. I shouldn't be laughing. I think it's actually staged pretty well and filmed pretty well. And that would be terrifying. You're just minding your business, doing your thing. And all of a sudden these trucks come flying in and your people are being raided and grabbed. And that's horrible. But
and driving over tents.
There's something about some of the shots that just gave me the giggles. I don't know why they were so funny. I love the girl with the who literally throws it in the air, goes running. My cabbages! I don't know why that's so funny to me. I don't know why it's so funny that Trudy, and I don't know why it's funny, even though it's completely relatable. When she sees what's happening, she's like, she just kind of throws Bray down to the ground. He's out of sight. He's fine. He can't roll away. He's not going anywhere. But that's hilarious. He's not gonna swim. To me. It's the way it looks.
Normally, no mother in her right mind would put anyone's baby that close to the water. But in a panic of having her child snatched again.
Oh my gosh.
And that raises an interesting point to me, the way you say it again. Because I just want to say, is there no better way that we could have used Rudy than to have yet another scene like this? I mean, is this it? Is this all we're going to give her? We've seen this.
Because traumatized Rudy works well.
Yeah, but
I'm disappointed in the egos. I'm disappointed in them. Because, I mean, it was a huge plot point in season 3 when the, you know, Lex, Bray, and Ebony were like, look, we need you guys to help us fight.
Yeah.
And Pride was actually advocating for them. Like, I've seen what the Chosen do. I literally saved this guy from being burned at the stake. We should probably get ourselves involved in this fight. And it was a big plot point. And then, you know, Lex was like, I'm going to neg them a little bit. The reason you guys don't want to fight is because you're chicken. You're weak. You ain't got nothing to offer in a street fight. And, you know, Pride kicks his butt. Or Lex lost on purpose. We don't know, right? And that was the point, that the guys, they were a part of the war. They were in the resistance. You know, they were in the city fighting with the rebels against the Chosen. And here, I was like, dude, the Technos didn't even use any of their lightsaber lasers on you. You guys just voluntarily got into the truck. I feel like if you want me to believe they're overpowering people, they either need to use their weapons and incapacitating people and they're falling to the ground or something, or there need to be more Technos to manhandle them. Because there's like 5 of them and it's like nobody's getting away. You know, they're just immediately being captured and put on, just voluntarily getting on the truck when they could have easily gotten away from these guys. And so that could have used a little more work and turns the whole thing kind of into a farce just so Brady can be snatched. It's so convenient that Trudy happened to be away from her daughter with baby Bray protecting the golden child over here. You know, she's looking out for that 666 tattoo showing up on him one of these days. So she's keeping a close eye. But who the frick knows where her kid is? Like, what? Why? What would be the point of that? It's just so Brady can be snatched. So poor Trudy can have a meltdown, which Antonia always comes and she plays hard and she nails it, you know. Yeah. And Hawk is trying to save her because in my head, he loves her. That's his woman. He's not going to let her get captured. And you will never convince me otherwise. Anyway, and it's also, she'll be frantic enough to be like, we have to get the back. And the only people who can help are the Mall Rats, especially now that Amber's there. And that's how Trudy will end up in the city. It's comical. The whole thing is silly.
It's so lazy.
It's so odd because, like, the way they filmed it, it looks like Trudy, Hawk, and Baby Bray are the only three people left in that camp. Yet somehow Trudy leaves Bray with someone.
Hulk?
No, he comes with her back to the city.
He comes with her.
Yeah.
Okay, well then.
He ain't abandoning his woman.
They just leave him.
He keeps his eyes on Trudy. He's like, nobody else is going to look after her. I just wish she'd look my way. I got a love song for them. Don't worry, Hawk. I got you covered.
Baby, bring it down the river.
That's it. Because we know, you know, young Damien, he's okay, he'll be fine. He can capture fishes, you know, bend people to his will, he'll be okay.
I mean, I will give it a pass that she's personally looking after the baby. You know, maybe Brady's with the other small children, you know, playing and stuff. Because she's an active toddler, preschooler at this time, you know. But the baby needs more attention and she took him somewhere quiet. I get that. Not to mention, you tend to watch other people's kids more than your own because you can't have someone else's kid dying on your time. I get that.
Especially
but look at Brady's face. Brady's face is just like, not this ish again. Are you freaking kidding me? She's not even scared. She's annoyed. And I don't blame her one bit.
Do you not know who I am? I'm the divine child.
Which is quite well done for someone that age.
Yeah, she's like, if I was Trudy, I'd be so pissed. I'd be so pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, are you freaking kidding me? We told you not to let these two into our camp. Told you! And Amber was like, sure, it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
Oh,
this is what happens when you let Ebony in.
Oh my gosh, you let a Techno and Ebony, who are on the run from the city, into your camp and were completely nonchalant about it. And not even give you're like, you guys should move camps while, you know, I'm going to head back to the city, but move camps because, remember, the Techno sent it all the way up here, okay? And then we went back and got their clothes. Wouldn't be hard for them to continue scenting all the way back to her camp. No, she was so unconcerned. And then like, bye, I'm going to go back. I'm going to chase this pretty boy back into the city with no explanation as to why that's suddenly important to me again. And we'll have the audacity when Trudy comes back to the mall, like frantic, and be like, is my son okay? Like, screw your son. Of course he's okay. Right? It's my child who's always been sacrificed on the altar of storylines. It's silly. Mm. It's very silly. And as Tamsin said, it's lazy.
I mean, if we're talking about people who are underused, Antonia is up there with Caleb. I mean, at least we've had a lot of screen time. We've had with her for obvious reasons. But when we do see her, it's just these recycled storylines over and over again.
She deserved so much better.
Yeah. Or like, if you can't
think of anything... She deserved to be with her kid for once.
Yeah? And if you can't think of anything to do with her, just write her out. I mean, just leave her and Brady with the Eco.
Let her be happy.
Leave them there. Yeah.
Let her be happy with Hawk.
But this is also that Mega can earn the trust of the Mallrats by rescuing Brady.
Yeah.
By bringing her back. And then they'll trust him. And Jay will act like he's always known him.
Yeah.
But never once reached out to him when he was trying to take Ram down or whatever. It's off. That's it. We needed to.
But it's almost over, guys.
I tell you, I feel like we're in a car going backwards. These last few episodes are just taking a million years.
There's only three left.
Yeah, we keep saying that, but we keep getting to them. But it also feels like there's still two more episodes. There's still one more episode. There's still another episode. What?
I know it feels very Twilight Zone-y, but we're almost there.
Oh God, I thought you were going to say it feels very Twilight-y, but...
Yeah, so this is a 50-50 episode for me. I thought there was actually some good writing, some great performances. They can't save anything, though.
No.
You know, they come too late, they're unearned, they weren't built to, and it's just a waste of potential.
I mean, the show's been on a terminal decline since the end of season 3, but this really cements that we're never going to have those high times again of season 1 and 2.
Cool. That was series 4, episode 49, to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe.co.uk or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation, just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And we'll see you next time for episode 50. So until then, bye.
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 50 still sounds like a threat.